Where was this altar placed? And what does that mean for us? Where was it located in the tabernacle area?
In the court, by the entrance.
Yeah, right by the door. In fact, it emphasizes that in Leviticus chapter 1. By the door of the tabernacle, the entrance to the tabernacle. So we're not talking about the entrance inside the curtained area, but it's inside this this gateway, the colored, the embroidered gateway. You could walk, some depict it, kind of walk on either side of it. Some show images of one part maybe being lifted up that you could walk beneath it. But in whatever way it was, you would enter the courtyard and the very first thing you would see was this altar. So we should make some applications there because that's also very significant. And I think Tim might have some applications to share with us.
Well, I was, I'm trying to put where we've been in line here. And I was thinking of, let me go to this point first. As you come in the door, it speaks of having a relationship with God. Mm-hmm. And so the first place or the first step in having a relationship with God is making sure sin is taken care of, making sure sins are taken care of, both. And so we have atoning, the atoning work. And this speaks of that. It speaks of the atoning work of Christ. And there's a verse in Leviticus chapter 17 that I think is helpful with this. It says in verse 11 that the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it to you upon the altar to make atonement for your souls. For it is the blood that makes atonement for your souls or for the soul. And then, of course, this is repeated in Hebrews chapter 9, verse 22. And it reminds us that without the shedding of blood, there is no remission. And we've added for sins, but really there's no remission, period, in the original. But just that thought. And so this first step, as you come in, it speaks of, big word, justification. It speaks of being declared righteous by God. And that's a powerful thing. Justification is not being made righteous. Justification is being declared righteous by God. And so we've been declared by God fit to move forward into His presence. If you put it in the term of the tabernacle. And so that's a marvelous thing when you think about it. And then tomorrow we'll learn something else that comes along with justification. But I'll let you think about what that word might be. But this right here is a starting place. And I was thinking of, in just in connection with this, thinking of the book of Romans in chapter 3 and 4, particularly chapter 3 and 4, but going into 5. And it says at the end of 4, but it shall be imputed to us who believe. In other words, who exercise faith in this work, the work of Christ, as this is pictured, in Him who raised up our Lord from the dead, or from among the dead, who was delivered up because of our offenses and was raised because of our justification. And then it develops that a little bit. And then it says, having been justified, we have peace with God. So we can move forward in our relationship with God, having been justified.
Tim, you mentioned justification was a big part of this furnishing. And it was mentioned also the bronze may have represented or represents judgment. So could you maybe just sort of clear the pathway between justice or judgment and justification, where it connects in terms of this?
That's a great question. And who's got the answer? Let's put it into a discussion form and see how can we help with that answering that question.
Well, I wonder if judgment is the front end of the transaction, and justification is the back end. It's the result of one's sins being judged. So in the way that the offerings are described in Leviticus, there's this aspect of the person placing their hand upon the animal, a sign of their personal identification with their sins, there being it being judged in the flame, and then there was the result being the person's sins were accounted for.
Mm. Somebody could pass the mic to the brother and then Rob. Oh, you got one. Very good. Thank you.
The brass or the copper is a metal that could subsist through fire, and Jesus as the Holocaust or the sin offering was the only one who could subsist through fire also. Mm-hmm. So he was the only sacrifice that could be made for the remission of sins, I guess.
Very good. A lot of thought from Romans chapter 3. Mm-hmm. The question about how is... Oh, pardon me.
And
go ahead.
Sorry. The only one who could impute justice or declare one righteous.
Yeah, that's very good. In fact, that's kind of just where I'm looking too. In Romans chapter 3, very good. The idea of the connection between judgment and justification in Romans 3, mm-hmm. we have God indicating that all have sinned, Romans 3:23. And yet we are justified freely by his grace, verse 24, because God, verse 25, has set forth Christ as a propitiation by his blood to demonstrate his righteousness, later in verse 25, and verse 26, to demonstrate his righteousness that he might be just and the justifier of the one who has faith in Jesus. So God's judgment is because God must maintain his righteous character. God cannot pass the sinner by. Justice demands that he must die. But in the cross of Christ we see how God can save, yet righteous be. It's one of the hymns. He is just. He will display the fact that he is just. And that's through judgment. But yet he will justify the one who has faith in Jesus, because that was the one he set forth as the sacrificial, as the sacrifice. And just to maybe highlight what we've sort of already implied, this is the only starting point mm-hmm. for a relationship with God. I really like the fact that God started by describing the ark and the table of showbread and the lampstand, all these glorious things inside, before he gave the directions about the brazen altar. It's kind of like, you know, you go to the travel agent, and the travel agent says, let me show you these wonderful brochures. You want to see some places you could go? Look at these fantastic places you could go. And you say, that is beautiful. How can I get there? And the travel agent says, well, there's, you know, only one flight a day to this such and such a place, and I can book the flight for you. Except that's a very crass illustration, but you get the point, that God starts, we start at the brazen altar. We start by saying, I need a relationship with God, and it's only going to be through the sacrificial work at this altar. But when God gave the directions, he started with some glorious things. Gold-covered objects, things that indicate that a relationship was truly possible. And then he says, okay, now here's where you start. You start at the bronze altar. Let me show you what you could have. And then you start at this altar, the altar of sacrifice. You must start at the altar of sacrifice. And that, in fact, this was as far as an ordinary Israelite, if you understand that term, only the priest could go past the bronze altar, the brazen altar. The priests would go to the laver. The priests would go into the holy place covered by the curtains, contained by the curtains. Only the high priest would go into the holiest of all. But an ordinary Israelite got to come into the tabernacle court and would be permitted, would be invited to bring a sacrifice, would be required to bring a sacrifice if it was an offering for sin, but was invited to bring a sacrifice of free will, of those burnt offerings, just to say to God how great his provision is, that there could be access into his presence.